Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is, well, let's call it Saturday, the 14th of January, Anno Domini, 2017. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. It's going to be a Clash McClavers of interesting stuff.
Huh?
Clash McClaver, it's a low, idle, or scandalous tale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A friend of mine gave me a calendar. It's a word a day. It's called Forgotten.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's called
Forgotten
English.
Yeah.
And he has challenged me to use one on the show every week.
Oh, there you go.
Last week it was Zingeration. Which is a musical party. I said George is coming in for a...
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and this one is Clash McClaver.
Oh, so we will be enlightened every week.
I'll try to be more subtle about it from now on, see if pick up on it.
Interestingly, a Clash McClaver is a scotch for gossip or foolish talk.
Yep. Yep, and that's where Clash McClaver comes from.
Yep.
All right.
Anyway, back to Soundbites.
Yeah, right. Well, we're talking about a bite of information.
Yes.
And it involves sound. So, shut up. Microsoft has released its first batch of patches for this year and one of the smallest ever for the company, with only 3 vulnerabilities fixed across its entire product portfolio. The patches are covered in 4 security bulletins, but one is dedicated to Flash Player, for which Microsoft distributed patches through Windows Update. The only security bulletin rated as critical is the one for Microsoft Office and Office Services and Web Apps. It covers a memory corruption vulnerability that can be exploited by tricking users to open specially crafted files and can lead to remote code execution. Another bulletin for Microsoft's Edge browser covers a privilege escalation flaw that has been exploited by tricking users to view a specially crafted web page. The issue exists in the browser's cross-domain policies and could allow attackers to inject information from one domain into another domain. Microsoft rates this bulletin as important. The third bulletin covers
only important.
Only important. It's only important that this is a problem. The third bulletin covers a denial of service issue in Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows Server 2008, and Windows Server 2008 R2, most of which products you should no longer be using. The flaw is in the Local Security Authority Subsystem Service, or LSAS, that handles authentication requests and can be exploited to reboot the system. The LSAS vulnerability is rated as important, but it has been publicly disclosed before being patched, and a proof-of-concept exploit for it could appear soon. So stop using Windows 7. It's worth noting, or Vista, for God's sake, stop using Vista. It's worth noting that this will be the last time Microsoft will arrange information about patches into security bulletins. Starting next month, the company will publish vulnerability and patch details on a new portal called the Security Updates Guide that will give users more flexibility in how they search for and view such information. For example, users will be able to sort and filter the data by CVE vulnerability identifier, knowledge base article, knowledge base article number, product or release date. They will also be able to filter out products that don't apply to them and access the information through an application programming interface. This could be the calm before the storm, said Chris Gettle, product manager at patch management firm Shavlik. We have not seen this light of Patch Tuesday since January of 2014. Next month, you should expect some adjustments and a heavier Patch Tuesday drop as Microsoft changes methodology. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft's January patch release is among its smallest ever. And the choices are, I always keep up to date. I like to let someone else be first. Wait, Microsoft products have updates? And nothing Microsoft for me, thanks. And so far, I always keep up to date has edged. Oh, no, has equaled nothing Microsoft for me, thanks. Followed by I'd like to let someone else be first. And, of course, one person had to choose. Wait, Microsoft products have updates? I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under the, under fascinating stuff, you'll find. Boy, I cannot talk this morning. You'll
new
find
mouth.
The new mouth. Can't do a thing with it. Just brush my teeth. The forum is under poll discussion. So far, at least, the first poll discussion is 14 Jan 17. Microsoft's January patch release is among its smallest ever, and so far, just two posts. So join us there and have something interesting to say there. And, of course, you can join us here, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I should say, speaking of updates, Consumer Reports updated their report on Apple's new batteries, new laptop battery life. Interestingly, to see how the headlines work on the different sites, turns out Consumer Reports had developer mode turned on and was running beta software.
But other than that,
it was fine.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So Consumer Reports says Apple fixes bug that Consumer Reports found in the beta software of the developer mode. And so now that the patch has been issued, Consumer Reports now does recommend Apple's laptops, and they're getting at least 15 hours on all the models. So don't use beta software in your testing. You know, don't use developer mode in your testing. That's intentionally slower and trying to fix problems. But they had to get that headline out before Christmas, and there's a lot of the other journalists are taking Consumer Reports to task for releasing such a flawed study. If one test shows 3 hours and one test shows 18 hours, something's wrong with your testing.
You're right.
You don't release, or at least you say this is preliminary and don't release any official findings about it. But very frustrating.
The problem is the news cycle. We see it in politics. Yep. We see it in computers. We see it in everything nowadays. Everybody has to be first. And most sensational. And so the amount of utter crud out there just increases exponentially every single day.
Right. And the initial report made all the news, in the general public,
right,
about how bad it was. The updated report that says why the first one was bad, no big deal. It's not reported any, except in the tech blogs where I went looking for it.
Right, right, where you have to go looking for it. Right.
So who was it last week? Was it one of our callers last week was looking at buying a new laptop and was concerned about this Consumer Reports story? And said, well, don't be concerned because you won't get a beta version.
Right, as long as you don't run beta software and as long as you don't run developer mode.
And
Apple, that's not developers of, like, I write websites, so I'm a developer. That's developing software for the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, you're writing an app inside the MacBook itself, not on the web.
Right. And also, of course, there was that Safari bug.
Well, that was one of the issues. They said that Chrome got better battery life than Safari.
Right.
Every other blog in the world says, what?
Right.
Because Chrome is not optimized for the Mac because it's a cross-platform browser. Everybody reports Chrome gives about a 15% battery hit.
Right.
And so they were, how can Safari be worse than Chrome? Because they were running a beta code. And so Apple fixed the bug in the developer code, and now Consumer Reports is happy.
Right.
I just had an interesting text.
Okay.
Somebody asked me, they're having trouble with the app, Jazz.
Oh, the Jazz 9.1 app. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
And the guy said, call me. Here's how that works. This is a call-in show.
You call us.
Show. So I texted him back. Here's our phone number. You call us.
Yeah, but I don't
call out.
Yeah, I can tell you about the Jazz 90.1 app. Theoretically, using the Jazz 90.1 app, you can listen to us on the air. That is broken. It is not the stream that is broken. You can still get it on TuneIn Radio. You can still get it on your web browser, any one of 100 other
YouTube.
Ways. YouTube. We have the YouTube stream. We have all of that stuff going on. What you can't use is the Jazz 90.1 app, and the developer knows about it and now just needs to fix it. It's not you. It's not us. It's the developer of the app itself. We here at Soundbites did not develop that app. Trust me when I tell you, none of us is an app developer. Not a single one of us.
But we have some really good ideas if you want to develop an app for us.
Right, give us a call. we would be happy to do that. But we know about it. The developer knows about it. Now it's just a matter of when will they fix it. And we apologize for those of you who use it every like I did. We'll see when the update appears, but we know about the issue and the developer knows about the issue and like that.
It is what it is. They are working diligently on it to fix it.
Mm. Yep.
So in the meantime, you can use the Jazz 90.1 stream in your web browser.
Yeah.
Right. Or you can use the YouTube app or YouTube website to watch the video stream too.
Yeah.
And if you want, you can ignore the video and just listen to the audio.
Right. Start the video up and then go to a different tab.
Yeah, really.
And do something else. Don't look at us.
We definitely have faces for radio.
No question. No question to that. The Jazz 90.1 app is currently, or is the combat, you can tell I don't actually speak French, and it is being worked on. But
yeah.
It is one of the things that we try to do is make. But like I said, if you've got iTunes, I don't know. Are we on iTunes?
Yes. As a podcast, but not as a live stream.
Oh, right. But for the live stream, you can use TuneIn Radio. That's what I was trying to say. TuneIn is an app you can download on your phone and get a billion different live radio streams, including Jazz 90.1. Mm-hmm. And so
a lot of different ways to listen to us.
Right. So there are a bunch of different ways that you can hear this show outside of the Jazz 90.1 app, which is, of course, as always, the best way. But they have to fix whatever. I don't know.
Minor technicality differences.
Right. That's up to them to fix. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing a lot of people. We usually get a fairly high number of folks listening to the stream.
Well, as a matter of fact, right now we're up to 103.
103 people.
Because of you listeners, and again, it's through all your support. You know, when we come to you twice a year, as you well know, and asking you for your help, that's what also has helped, is through your donations. Before, we were limited to, I think it was like, the magic number was 99.
Yeah, if we hit 99, it crashed.
It crashed, and then everybody lost out. Well, we were able to bump it up, and we got it up to, I think it's 125 now.
Right.
So all you folks now, whether you realize it or not, due to your dollars in that, we were able to up it a little bit. And you folks listening on the stream, boom, you're not going to get bumped just because all of a sudden we exceeded the limit.
Right.
And so far, we have it. We come close. You know, because
we continue to come close, and if we need to, we can
bump
if
it
we
more.
Can afford it, we can up it again, and that again, that is thanks specifically to you folks who have been kind enough to become members of the Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites families.
It's all on them
through your generous donations. So thank you very much, those of you who are listening right now on the stream. It has not crashed, even though there's more than 100 of you. So that's all on you. Well done. Yeah. Well done for those of you who have, and for those of you who are still freeloading, you can join, of course, at any time. Just go to jazz901.org and click the Donate Now button.
Yeah, and just put in there you want to become a member under Soundbites.
Right.
Because it kind of gives us a little more encouragement, because the three of us give up our Saturdays every Saturday and come here to answer your computer questions, which, you know, you hear all the time that we, you know, offer so much advice, and you hear it. You hear it every time, too. The folks will call in and say, gee, you guys helped us out. We go, oh, we did?
Yeah.
We got lucky.
Yeah. Well, 103 people right now are directly reaping the benefits of that.
And 14 people on the YouTube stream.
And 14 people on the YouTube channel. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And that was the Who. Who's on first?
That was Who?
Yeah, who's on next?
Yeah, there you go.
Guess who's coming up later?
Right.
Yes is this afternoon. So there's a rock and roll version of the Abbott and Costello routine with Who, Guess Who, and Yes.
That's very nice. That's very nice. I also heard my daughter did a skit in high school. They did the Who's on First in Shakespearean English.
It was hysterical. Oh, that had to be hilarious.
It was hysterical.
I think I've even heard it in Klingon.
I don't doubt that. And he's looking it up now, and he'll be able to recite it with the correct accent.
By next hour.
Yeah.
And even so, he's married and has a child. No one knows how this happened. No one understands this at all. Except his wife also speaks Klingon.
We had Kirk and Picard on our wedding cake.
There you go.
In their dress uniforms.
Oh, my God. You people are geeks. You call us geeks.
Yeah, really.
All right. Google has shut down a high-severity exploit in its Nexus 6 and 6P phones, which gave attackers with USB access the opportunity to take over the onboard modem during boot up, allowing them to listen in on phone calls or intercept mobile data packets. The vulnerability was part of a cluster of security holes found by security researchers at IBM's X-Force, all related to a flaw tag CVE-2016-8467 in the phone's boot mode, which uses malware-infected PCs and malicious power chargers to access hidden USB interfaces. Patches were rolled out before the vulnerabilities were made public in November for the Nexus 6 and in January for the 6P. The exploit was also allowed access to find the phone's exact GPS coordinates with detailed satellite information, place phone calls, steal call information, and access or change non-volatile items in the EFS, the file system, the file structure. It was complex to activate, which is why we didn't hear much about it, because what you had to do, it required the victim to have the Android Debug Bridge, or ADB, enabled on their devices, which only developers really do. Mm-hmm. It's a debugging mode used by developers to load APKs, or the app package, APK, onto Android phones, and to have manually authorized ADB connectivity with the infected PC or charger, because every time you connect with an ADB, you have to say, yes, I want to connect to this device. However, of course, according to researchers, there were significant workarounds. The vulnerability in 6P enables the ADB interface, even if it was disabled in the developer settings user interface. With access to an ADB authorized PC, a physical attacker could open an ADB session with the device, cause the ADB host running under the victim's PC to RSA sign the ADB authentication token. And it gets even more complex from there. The basic idea is the older Nexus 6 was more vulnerable to this attack than the 6P, which has more modern diagnostics disabled which has the modem diagnostics disabled in the firmware, but it could still be used to break into the modem's AT interface. That interface would let attacker sender eavesdrop on SMS messages and potentially bypass two-factor authentications. Researchers did find a separate vulnerability at the same time in the F_USB net driver, in which 4 or 5 bytes of an uninitialized kernel data were padded to every Ethernet frame carried over USB, which effectively allowed attackers to access and compromise network traffic. Google flagged this as a moderate severity and patched it back in October. So the basic idea is, if you have a Nexus 6, have you updated it recently? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0414. 1.5. We hear about vulnerabilities in devices all the time. This was one of the least worrying.
Yeah.
It was a cluster flaw that they had a cluster fix for.
Exactly. Exactly. Well done.
Yeah, well put.
Well done. But basically, you know, you had to have the machine attached to a computer through USB. Physically attached to a computer, not Bluetooth or anything else. Then you had to be running the developer mode. Then you had to have the Nexus 6. Then you had to have the old Nexus 6, which with the flaw in it. And then that person had to have physical access to your devices in order to install the bad stuff. So it really was, you know, one of the least worrying problems that we've seen in a long time. But the important thing is they caught it and they updated it. And that's, as long as you've updated your machine, your phone, you're in good shape. Everything's updating recently. I updated my Chromebook yesterday. I updated my watch the other day. Comes up and says, charge this device to update it.
Mm-hmm.
Stick it on the charger. Bang, it updates. Everything was beautiful.
There you go.
And then I keep forgetting to go search for what the updates did.
Fixed something.
Fixed something. Yeah. I know. I'm pretty sure I didn't get any extra features, but it fixed something.
Something that was broke that you didn't realize was broken.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So
had no indication thereof.
Right. So I've had people who were very interested in these watches. Everybody looks at them. And, of course, to the general, you'll be happy to hear this, general public, everybody always asks, is that an Apple Watch?
Yeah.
No, it's the Android version of the Apple Watch. Android makes a version? Yeah, like about 1,000 of them, and there are more of them out there. Never mind.
Yeah, don't go there.
The Motorola did say they're cutting back on their Android production. Didn't they discontinue the Moto 360?
They discontinued the old 360 because everybody had the flat tire on it. It's a round watch. Only the bottom, like, 16th of the watch was black, so it looked when
like
you,
a flat tire.
Yeah, when it lit up, it looked like a flat tire, round and then flat on the bottom.
Yeah,
makes and sense. I'm not sure why they did that, but they did that, and so
because watches are round.
Because watches are round, and why they left the bottom out? It may have had something in it, like a camera or or they were making room for a camera. And another, I don't remember why, but so that's that. Yeah, they may have discontinued that model, although it doesn't look like it on their website.
Yeah,
certainly. And if they did, then I'm sure we'll be seeing them on Woot pretty soon. So here's your opportunity to pick up a Moto 360 for cheap.
I don't see a buy button anywhere. There's a shopping cart icon, but I don't see any buy button.
I don't know. Nope, I don't see it either. The big thing is this watch that I got. You know, this is a $280 watch. I got it for $70 on Woot. I haven't worn a watch since I gave up my pocket watch in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't missed it. I haven't needed it. But everybody has been asking me questions about watches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I do this? Does it do that? Can I blah, 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 blah. So I wasn't about to spend $250, $300 on a watch I probably would never wear. But this came up on Woot, and I thought, yeah, all right.
Try it for 70 bucks.
Let's see what I'll go through for you people out there. So I bought the thing. I can't take it off now. I use it constantly. It's not just time and temperature, but when I'm driving, it'll show me directions. I can Google Hey Google, but not the word Hey. The watch and it'll
set off good. Two phones.
Hey Google or OK Siri?
Yeah, OK Siri. Right.
Or did you hear about the guy
just plain Alexa?
It was a San Diego news local news station. Apparently, this little kid we talked about last week, a little kid was able to use her sleeping mom's thumbprint to order a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Another little kid said, hey, A-word, would you play Dollhouse with me and get me a dollhouse? And it did.
Yep.
It ordered her a dollhouse. It showed up. And then they talked about it on the news, and the news reporter said the exact same phrase again, and people all over San Diego started calling in saying, you just told my thing to order a dollhouse for me.
Yeah, what people don't know is that using the app on your phone, you can turn off purchasing.
And I think they're saying one of the podcasts I heard is that there's a PIN anyway. You have to enter your PIN to actually do a purchase.
You have to enter your PIN
that can be turned off manually. The PIN is on by default.
Right, it's on by default. So you have to turn that off manually because, you know, people don't like, well, I suppose you don't want to say your PIN out loud if you're in a group.
Yeah.
But if you're in your home.
It is annoying every time you want to buy something to enter your PIN. But when someone else buys it, make the PIN. Well, that's hard to do.
Right. So one of the things you can do is turn off purchasing or turn on that PIN. And so they just simply didn't do that.
Yep.
The first thing I did on my Alexa was turn off purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the very first day I had it, their commercial came on.
Mm-hmm.
And it said something about Alexa, buy bandages. And the next thing I know, my thing is lighting up, and I'm over there going, shut up.
You just did it. Everyone check your A word.
Yeah, right.
the one thing the report said is they couldn't return it. And that surprises me because Amazon is really, really good about returns.
Yeah, you should be able to return anything like that. That's not
a friend of my son's was over the other night and set alarms in my son's Echo all night long.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, wake me up at 2 a.m.
Right. Oh, lovely. That's lovely.
Set an alarm for 3 a.m. Set an alarm for 5 a.m.
Right, nice. One of the things, last night we went to a wake, so we went out to dinner, and the server's name was Alexa. And I asked her, I said, have you been annoyed by Amazon? She says, I bought my mom one for Christmas, and then we had an argument, and the thing kept answering her.
Yeah.
She got so angry, I won the argument. I thought, I'm going to get you in. That's fine. Now we're good. All right, to the phones. Our first caller today is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hi there, guys. Question for you. A question for you about Yahoo email item, and then maybe you might have a follow-up. I had a question for you about a month ago and how I found some corrections.
Okay.
So, first one, the Yahoo email. I remember years ago they told you do not look at your emails in the preview screen because basically you can basically almost like opening up the door and letting a virus get in or whatever.
Yeah, what happens is many of the, back in the day you had to click on something to get a virus.
Right.
Now you just have to view an ad because the email now is full HTML, which means it's also JavaScript. And JavaScripts can happen automatically. So if you see a suspicious email and you click on it and delete it without opening it, you're good. But if you open it, you can get caught. And preview is misnamed because it really is opening it.
Yeah. Well, here's the question now, because in the past what I did then, I never did that, but I would be able to right-click it, see full header, and I look the header and decide, okay, this is a piece of garbage or not.
Right.
Well, now I right-click, and it comes up as no more looking at the header. You look at the raw message. It has everything in there. I mean, completely. I can look at the entire message itself, but it has all this coding, everything about where, what diagrams, what image should be here and whatever else. Is that safe, or is that almost like doing the preview?
From what we're looking at right now, that's safe. It seems to be a text representation of the data that are in the email. And so,
and you can't read it anyway because it's text encoded. The one I happen to pick on is text encoded binary.
Right, which may in fact have some junk in it that you really don't want to look at. But so, it looks to me as though that's safe because it is just a textual representation of the data, including binary code.
I don't think there's any text in this message. It's all...
It's very possible many of them are nowadays.
Yep.
Yeah, well, mine is. I can look at a number of my experimented on ones that I know I've got archived or whatever, and I'm looking at the entire message, the whole thing that's there. Any links, but they're all, as you say, text. So I thought, okay, you got to ask you if it's safe.
And that's because companies, in essence, stop sending email and are sending web pages to you via email.
Okay.
So you've got fonts, you've got colors, you've got graphics, you've got links, which it's nice for the people, but then bad guys have taken advantage of that, and that's how the bad things go. So you don't even have to click an ad anymore. That just by viewing that ad, it will potentially download and install stuff in your computer. So so you're doing it good by showing the raw text. Or a lot of times you can tell it's junk even from the subject and header. So you often don't even need to get into the text or the full headers.
Right. Okay, great. Well, the other thing, like I said, I talked to you about a month ago about my Grub menu issues. And one of them was that I had Ubuntu on a laptop, but I encrypted it. And you told me I should have to go over to X. Well, I found I did some other looking into other forums going way back to 2007 and 2008 that people said, well, one of them is that what happens is that when they install it, it seemed that the Ubuntu or Zubuntu thought you were dual booting. So all I had to do was go into Grub config and comment out one line, and boom, I got the whole Grub menu again.
Oh, there you go. I see what you're saying. Yeah. That makes sense, actually. I misunderstood you.
Yeah, and then the other one was, again, going into X,
Walter, hold on. Stay on the line. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Walter from Greece, and you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, members of Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we still have Walter from Greece on the line. Sorry to cut you off before, Walter.
No, it's understandable. Completely understandable.
So what's up?
Well, the next thing that was that you really did tell me I had to go with Grub, do the X, looking for X, is that I would just continually have the dark purple screen or black screen. So what I did, again, finding way back to 2000, 2007, they said all the problems were based on when you go edit a Grub, edit one of the kernels to start up the machine.
Yep.
That in there is a line of a $ VSH swap off or something like that.
Okay.
And when you go into there, if you can eliminate that, that will not force the machine to look for some other drivers, more up-to-date drivers for X.
Right.
What I did then, the guy said, well, if you want to really see what's going on, get rid of the eye candy. So he said, go over to the line where it goes RO, then get rid of quiet splash and that $VHS, whatever, and just hit F10. And off it goes, and now you don't get to see the little swirly things and whatever else. Instead, you just see it giving you a cascade of everything that says, I'm starting the motor manager, I'm starting this daemon, I'm starting this, etc. And this way, now I know what I'm getting, that the machine is not just giving me a black screen. At least I see that it's not stuck. It's actually booting.
Right. There are a million things you can do with Grub. Grub, for those of you who are only Windows people, Grub is the bootloader under Unix, under most Unix systems, including Ubuntu and other versions of Linux. And what Grub has in it is the ability to do an astonishing amount of stuff. Just astonishing. But that means that with all those choices, you have a lot of work to do if you want to change stuff. And what Walter is talking about is one of the things you can do is have what's called a splash screen, which just shows you whatever the picture is that you've chosen, that's been chosen for you usually in the version of Linux that you're running. Or you can turn off the splash screen and see all of the messages as it loads various drivers.
Right.
Having the ability to look at those messages means you can easily see where if something goes wrong.
Right.
And that's basically what he's talking about with this change that he made to Grub. Now, don't forget, anytime you make a change in Grub, you should run update-grub.
Yes.
As root, so you can do sudo update grub.
Yep, I do that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the command that I had to replace all of that, the quiet splash, was quotation mark space, quotation mark space, quotation mark, and that did give me the full cascade of everything that's floating on.
Sure,
and
because
I'm real happy about that now.
Yep, good, good, good. The old machines had only that. There were no splash screens,
right,
for a lot of versions of Linux, and people complained about that because now they were looking at all this junk coming up the screen that they didn't have any idea what that was. But for the people who want to see that, for the people who understand what they're looking at and want to see where the errors are and maybe where it stops booting if there's a problem, that's sort of the ability to watch the error, the not error messages, the messages roll up is a very good thing. Thanks, Walter.
Thank you very much. I mean, you led me right on a path to go ahead and find out even more, because it was in trying to find out about X that I ended up with these other discoveries. Then, thank you very much for leading me on.
Well, it was my pleasure. Good luck with your journey of discovery.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. One of the beautiful things about playing with Linux is that it is indeed different from Windows, and you get to play again, and you get to look at all the cool new stuff again, and so that's kind of fun.
And some of the old crazy stuff that looks scary at first. Same thing on the Mac, because it's Unix-based underneath. When that Apple logo comes up on screen, there's actually Unix things loading behind it.
Right.
And if you hold down Command V for verbose, you see all of those Unix loading messages. They don't mean anything unless you understand Unix. And
right.
I'll sometimes do it to scare people. Oh, right. My God, look at that. No, and then it boots okay after
right.
that. You know. But so actually, we use it as a diagnostic tool sometimes to see what the error messages are.
Exactly. Yeah. If you know what you're looking at and something fails or whatever, you can see an error message on that screen, and that helps you to diagnose it. But for the average user, not so much.
Yep.
So if you want to see what it looks like, you can do that, or as Steve said, if you've got a Mac, you can hit that Command V. But don't get excited by seeing a bunch of stuff you don't understand, because that's what you just did on purpose.
Everybody always says, "Oh, that looks like DOS." And it's, no, DOS looks like Unix.
Exactly. That is exactly true. Like we said, that's one of the lovely things about Linux, is that you can do that. Now, you don't get any of that on a normal Unix machine. You don't get any a Linux machine. You don't get any of that on Windows. You don't get any of the Mac. You don't get any of that on a Chromebook either. Well, Chromebooks boot up so fast.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see any of that stuff anyway. But it's nice. Unix was originally, of course, designed by geeks for geeks originally, before they made it user-friendly and all the other great things. But that heritage is still there, and if you know how to do it, you can see all that stuff and play around with it. When I first got my new desktop, put Linux on it, and it had a horrible, horrible time. It's another one of those machines that was designed for Windows,
mm-hmm.
and when you put not Windows on it, it gets a little wonky.
Yep. That's a polite way of putting it.
Yeah. So it really was just one command that once I found it and put it into my grub menu, everything runs perfectly. I mean, I couldn't possibly be happier. Everything runs.
Well, see, that's where, just to interrupt you for a second, is where you got to come up with another class, and that's to do Chrome on an old laptop.
Yep.
Come up with the CDs that people can, you know, get from your class for signing up, and put it in.
Help cloud them ready. Put cloud ready on their machines.
Load it on there. Put cloud ready on and turn that old laptop that's sitting over in the corner and it's not worth that much. It's old. It's slow and that. But turn it into a Chromebook and it's like, wow.
Yep. We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
And I've actually thought about it during the week.
Good.
So I'm retired now, and I have time to think.
Yeah, right.
I have time to think.
You seem busier.
I am busier.
No, you seem busier than when you were actually working. And not that you didn't work your butt off then.
I did.
Yeah.
I did, but now I know. Mm-hmm. But I thought about doing this because I can't just retire. I'm an idiot.
No, that's the way with, I think, any of us nowadays.
Yeah. But the problems are multitudinous. First is what I charge for this class. So I would want to make something out of the deal. I'm retired. I need money.
Yeah.
So I would want to make. So what would be a fair charge? What would people pay for a class to help them turn their old laptops into Chromebooks?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, where do you do it? You need a place with a lot of table space, mm-hmm. a lot of electricity, and good internet bandwidth. So, and what would that cost me?
Yeah.
So that says,
a lot of,
you know,
factors in there.
Right. And how many people would want this thing? And it just becomes a lot. And I have to figure all that out if I'm going to do this. I have to do the math and figure out the cost benefit and the ROI and see if it actually makes sense to do this. So we'll see. I'm actively looking at how to do it, but I just need a place and people and et cetera, et cetera. So maybe I'll put together just a little questionnaire that people can answer.
Or you could also put together a package which people could purchase from you.
That's true.
It's step-by-step instructions with the CD.
That's true.
On how to load it. And on there could also be a tutorial.
Yep. I also was looking at a new thing that YouTube is doing, will be doing. They're about to launch a thing called Super Chat. And it's essentially a YouTube video thing with a chat box underneath so people can chat back and forth to you. And they can pay to have their chat, the thing they type in, pinned at the top for X number of minutes or hours or whatever it all is. I was thinking, you know, if you did something like that, you could answer the questions of people who pay to get their questions answered. And then again, what do you charge? And, you know, what would the questions be about, since you have to have a working computer in order to do YouTube and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot in the background there. You know, the basic idea is, oh, I could make money with this. There's way more to it than that. And we'll see. YouTube, they haven't really, they announced it today, but they haven't figured out exactly how they're doing it. And maybe this will be the next incarnation of Ask Nick. You want to ask me a question instead of being a member or whatever, you can just pay to ask the question. And what would I charge? I don't know. I don't know anything yet. What is their minimum amount you can charge on YouTube? I don't know any of that yet, right? So that they've just announced that it's there, and I haven't really
explored it further.
Yeah, yeah. But those are all the things, those are all the possibilities. And as much as I like giving away things for free, I also like continuing to have a roof over my head and
that kind of
and
helps.
Being able to feed my family.
Well,
so
that's the thing. And then we do this show. Again, folks, we don't get paid for this, so, you know.
That's right. That's right. So,
and it gets tricky for us sometimes because we do volunteer at Soundbites here, and I do on Apple Cider. But then in our businesses, we have to get paid for our.
Well, exactly.
And it gets
exactly.
It's a little tricky.
And people tend to forget that. We were talking about that the other day. I gave a talk at Apple Cider this last week.
Very well, and nobody left at the break. They all stayed for you.
Is that something that doesn't always happen?
That doesn't always happen.
I was very appreciative. You have a good audience. They're good people, and I gave a little talk, and it was apparently very well received. But
what was your talk at?
I don't remember anymore. They called me up. Called me up 24 hours before the event and said, would you talk tomorrow night?
Because Jerry was sick. We hope Jerry's feeling better.
Yeah, we all hope Jerry's feeling better.
And Phil is supposed to be talking next week, month on the Spectrum merger and cutting the cord. Phil, please give me a call. Send me an email. We want to make sure that you remember.
Oops.
You can probably send him a message through Stop the Cap.
I have.
Okay.
I have both his email addresses, and I don't know if mine are getting caught in his junk mail.
Oh, it's very possible.
Maybe he's just so busy with all the stuff that's
but
happening.
But all those of you who know Phil, let him know that Steve is trying to get in touch with him. I talked about the way the internet has changed in the last 10 years.
Oh, okay.
2007 to today, and it was
3 billion people.
3 billion people are on the internet. Three plus billion people are on the internet now. 10 years ago, it was just over 1 billion. So it's gotten three times bigger. That's almost half the people on Earth are now on the internet.
And I'll bet you it's even more than that.
Well, it's and that was actually at the end of last year. That was the number, and of course now it's been another 14 days. So you know, it keeps getting more and more and more, and more people are finding multiple ways to get on. You know, 10 years ago was the introduction of the first iPhone. So before that, very very few people ever got on the internet with a phone. You could.
Yes, but it was also costly.
It was painful.
It was painful and costly.
Yeah.
The internet made it more costly and not much easier, but with a bigger screen. Back in the day, you know, you still had 1X speeds on cell phones. And so we talked about how that all got better as time went on and how more and more stuff changed and all the other stuff that changed on the internet. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and we were going somewhere with that. I was going to explain something else that we had talked about, but I don't remember what that was, and it's all gone now.
CRS.
And speaking of internet changes, we just changed our internet provider at the office this week. Our previous provider was offering us 6 megabit. We were lucky to get 5.
Yep.
The new provider said they would give us 60.
Wow.
We're getting 70.
Wow.
So jumping from 6 to 70.
Yeah.
So those hour downloads for customers now take minutes.
Yeah. Maybe I'll come over to your place and do my classes.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, that's it. You've wasted another hour of your life with this stuff. We're going to give you a chance to do it again. So stay tuned. Stay on the phone or stay on the stream or stay in your chair. Just don't move. Just don't go anywhere for another hour. And we'll be back with a whole another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's Nick Francesco. It's all of you. It's Sound Bites. And it is the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported. Thanks to you, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. According to people familiar with the discussions, Apple is taking pitches from Hollywood producers and courting television marketing executives as it considers bolstering its Apple Music service with original movies and TV shows. And to be clear, I said is taking pitches. As in show pitches. This is the show I want to produce, not taking pictures. Apple has toyed with playing a larger role in entertainment several times, only to either retreat in the face of roadblocks or opt for smaller moves. A goal of streaming, broadcast, and cable television seamlessly to Apple TV never materialized. For instance, instead, it worked on a concert film with Taylor Swift and video shorts with artists such as Drake. It cut a deal with CBS for a program based on the Carpool Karaoke skit featuring late-night talk show host James Corden, and is planning a reality show about technology startups. But Apple has the cash, cachet, and incentive to push further. Less clear is whether the Cupertino company's ambition is to take on HBO and Netflix or simply to launch occasional gambits to encourage Apple Music signups, which is the way it's kind of worked so far. An insider said Apple has told people in the entertainment industry that productions greenlighted and funded by the company would become available to people who pay $10 a month for Apple Music. though the Apple Music service has reached 20 million subscribers in less than 2 years, many consumers see no reason to ditch YouTube, Spotify, and other rival streaming services. Spotify has doubled the number of paying customers, while YouTube hasn't released such figures. Access to high-caliber programming could force people to reconsider. According to an entertainment industry executive, content creators have been pitching scripted projects that Apple would produce, but executives at several Hollywood studios have said that they are not in talks with Apple about joint productions or even licensing old TV shows or movies. Apple finds itself at a pivotal moment, coming off its first annual sales decline since 2001. That's an incredible run. The company's widening power in global technology and entertainment stems from sales of its iPhone. The pricey and hugely profitable gadget has turned Apple into the world's most valuable company. But with more than 1 billion iPhones sold, a third of the people who get on the internet apparently own iPhones, sales have begun to flatten out. People are switching to new models less often. They're opting for other brands whose devices are often more affordable or more customizable. The company has yet to demonstrate a product or service that can take over for the iPhone's once phenomenal sales growth. But many analysts view selling access to entertainment as at least part of the solution. So, would you pay for an original series on Apple TV? Why or why not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, the one show that they have already announced, and we're doing casting calls, is called currently called The Planet of the Apps. And music artist Will.i.am is apparently on board. And it's going to be like a Shark Tank for app developers. So you can go with your app idea, and if they like it, they'll fund it.
Nice. Reality shows are very, very popular because they cost so little comparatively to produce. I like that idea, Planet of the Apps, very clever name, and a very nice idea.
Pierre Boulez might be suing them, though.
That wouldn't be Pierre Boulez. That would be Charlton Heston.
No, the author of Planet of the Apes.
No, Pierre Boulez was the guy who
Pierre Boulez.
Pierre
Boulez.
There you go.
Yeah, Pierre Boulez was 2001.
Right, was the guy in
2001. Oh, it's Hal's birthday. This week was Hal's 25th birthday.
Oh, that's right.
According to 2001, Hal was first turned online at the National Center for Superconducting Activities at Urbana, Illinois, 25 years ago this week.
That's right.
So where is our Hal 9000?
That's right.
And why didn't we go to Saturn in 2001?
Daisy. All right. I don't know. That's actually, Well, talking about film and TV thing, that's actually kind of where everybody's trying to go now. Everybody, Sling TV, everybody's got their broadcasting station has their own app now. Mm-hmm. Half of them charge you for it, and it's a nominal fee, like $5, but by the time you gather 20 channels together, you're paying more than you would for cable. So it's something that they have to figure out how to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You get things like Sling TV, which does aggregate them all for 20 or 30 or 35 or $40 a month, depending which package you get.
Amazon does the same thing.
Right.
In fact, they're coming out, I think it's later this month, or the beginning of next month. Supposedly, they've got a big announcement coming out that they're really, because they have a package out there now that you can sign up for and, you know, get certain, you know,
right,
packages. But they are, as they leaked out conveniently,
yeah,
that if you thought Sling was good, wait till you see our package when we roll this one out and what it's going to cover and everything else and for the price point.
Right.
Like you said before, as we were talking earlier, you know, back, what, maybe a couple years ago, I was sitting there adding up what all the different programs would cost me. And I looked at it and I thought, that's going to be more than my current cable bill. But then all of a sudden, just last year, I wound up cutting the cord because I wound up going to the Sling.
Mm-hmm.
And Sling, you know, offered me everything that I wanted that I had on cable for a lot less.
Yep. Yep.
The and only thing that I need, which you have.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly what you need.
Greenlight.
That is exactly what you need. I want to thank publicly, I want to thank the people at Greenlight because the other day during the big windstorm, a tree came down in our backyard. Coincidentally, of course, the tree we had been planning on cutting down.
Isn't it nice when it happens that
way? Yes and no, because it took out everything. Everything. Well, we didn't lose... Back in the big ice storm in the 90s, we had the same thing happen. Everything came down and pulled everything down off our house. But it worked kind of like a breaker. All the staples snapped out, and the stuff was lying in the pond.
Oh, okay.
But it was still connected, which is actually kind of worse if you think about it.
In
you really
water.
Don't want an electrified pond.
Yeah.
That's not something that's good.
Yeah.
And as always, the power company didn't believe me. But back in the storm, I called and said, my power lines are in my pond. And they said, that's okay. We'll be at your neighborhood in a few days. I said, no, you don't understand. My power lines are in my pond. He said, that's okay. I said, no, I have power and the lines are in the water. He said, no, that's not possible. The entire neighborhood is out. Sir, I know when the lights are on in my house. When I can,
yeah,
you know,
they're these bright
see
objects.
Them. Right, right, right. And so I'm telling you I've got electricity. No, you don't. Okay.
That's fine.
Fine.
So you're not going to argue.
We didn't let the dog out in the yard and blah, blah, blah for a few days. And finally they came. And the guy who comes into our yard starts screaming at me because I've got a live electrical lines in my pond. And I should have called and told them.
Yep.
This is why I don't carry a firearm.
Yeah.
This right here is
lucky,
the reason.
Lucky for them.
Lucky for them. This and me. This is the reason I don't carry a firearm. But they got it all fixed and was fine. This time around, I called and told them that and said, we will get someone there immediately. So they were certainly in the last 15 years.
They must have marked your file.
Right.
This guy has a pod.
Right. The problem is, of course, nobody else is apparently allowed to touch their wires until RG&E says it's safe. Which makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
Which makes sense. I have live electrical wires lying in a pond. Nobody's going to want to go near there until RG&E does their thing.
Yeah.
So
they're trained.
RG&E came and cut the piece of the tree right out that was over the wires, pulled that out of the way, left the rest of the tree on the ground, which is fine. That's not their job. And put the electrical wire back up. And then cable, Time Warner came through and did theirs, and then Greenlight came through and did theirs. So I was out of internet for... And I never lost cable, and I never lost electric. But I did lose
Greenlight
because it snapped the fiber.
Yeah.
The fiber just snapped right off. So that was the only thing I lost, and it was about a day and a half. But that's certainly not their fault. They were very responsive. They called me back to tell me what the problem was and why they were waiting and everything else. And I could not possibly be any happier with the service of all three of them, of RG&E, of Time Warner, and of Greenlight. They all got to me, you know. Admittedly, there were way more people with way more problems than me during that windstorm, and I get that. But they got to me in a timely manner and got me back up and running. And I really was only one day, you know, did my eyes start to twitch and all that.
I've always wanted a slap button on the phone where you can just reach through and slap somebody.
No, they were all three of them were very, very... professional, very responsive, very understanding, and you know, given the circumstances that I was not the only person in the greater Monroe County area who had problems, they were quite responsive and quite timely in their response. So thank you to RG&E, to Time Warner, and especially to Greenlight, since that's the only thing I was actually out of. For getting things done in a timely manner. And my wife did not miss her deadline on the game she plays in Facebook, whatever she was doing.
Which would be horrors.
Which would be horrifying, absolutely. Yep. And so that was our adventure from the windstorm. It was Wednesday night when I was at the meeting. So I actually had a little bit of internet Wednesday night.
Yep.
And I used my phone for a couple of things, but of course, you know, God forbid you use the data on your phone because there's three of us on a fairly small data plan because I'm retired now and we can't afford a big data plan. And so, you know, my daughter gets most of that. So, but that's it. And it was very, very nice of them. It was very lovely of them to get it up. But, you know, I realized how much of my entertainment actually comes through the internet. Which is kind of the point of this. I watch a number of TV shows, but some of them I watch online, and some of them I watch, you know, through the various apps, as opposed to, because I can get them on demand and I can do all of that, but sometimes I do that, and sometimes I watch them through the apps. I've been keeping track of what I watch online versus what I watch via cable, and I can see myself getting closer and closer to the day when cable is not a necessity.
Yep.
Yeah, well, like I told you, once they wanted to up my bill again.
Yep.
And it's, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV, but there are certain programs that I do enjoy.
Forged in Fire is back.
Ooh.
I love Forged in Fire.
He did
It's not a he. There's four guys.
Yeah, well, one of the guys did a thing at the Science Center last.
Doug Markida. He is from Rochester.
Yeah.
I missed it, too.
We heard it after the fact.
You told me about it. You told me about it after the fact. I'm blaming you.
Yeah.
Entirely blaming you.
I'm blaming my wife. She told me after the fact.
It's all Shirley's fault.
There we go.
That's clear. She's not listening, is she?
Probably I was going to say, otherwise you better sleep with one eye open.
That's right. I told him this the other night. I said, what was it we were talking about? I forget what it was, but I said, I'll take the blame for that. I don't have to sleep with one eye open at your house.
But with you know, with
to be clear, I don't sleep at his house at all. Look, I don't know what you heard just now, but
that was the other Nick.
None of that was what was said.
And you know, speaking of watching on the internet, there's a Netflix scam going around. Please don't fall for it. You get an email from Netflix wanting you to, you know, verify your credentials or, you know, some service is being updated, and it's fake. Netflix then gets your get your Netflix credentials, so then they start sending you to more ads, and then they'll ask for your credit, you know, to update your credit card information. So now they have your credit card to steal your money. They'll ask for your social security number, so now they can steal your identity.
Wow.
Netflix will never do any of that. In fact, most companies will never do any of that on over the internet. They'll maybe in their own app.
Yeah,
it's a little safer, but yeah. So, you know, be wary about now fake Netflix ads.
All right, going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco. 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member support of Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright,
and I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Hey, semi-good news for some of you. On Monday, Microsoft delivered a new Windows 10 build that includes changes designed to address long-standing complaints about the operating system's update practices. Testers, those registered with the Windows Insider program and on its fast release track, were handed build 15002. Donna Sarkar, the Microsoft software engineer who serves as the public face and voice for Insider, called 15002 a big update and a post to the company blog that spelled out a slew of changes. Among them are several related to how Microsoft updates the OS. Users can now pause updates, including security updates, for up to 35 days. Now, all insiders can put updates on pause. But when the feature goes live with the next upgrade to all customers, the Switch will not be offered to customers running Windows 10 Home. Instead, the option will be available only in the more expensive and largely business-oriented Windows 10 Pro, Windows 10 Enterprise, and Windows 10 Education. Microsoft has made a habit of providing the most update and upgrade flexibility to users of Pro, Enterprise, and Education. Windows 10 Home users, for example, are required to adopt updates as soon as Redmond puts them out. Sarkar did not elaborate on which updates are delayed by the new pause, but a Microsoft spokesrobot later defined those covered by the postponement. All updates through Windows Update are paused, except for Windows Defender updates, which are small virus definition updates that do not cause a reboot or change the behavior of the machine in any way. Did he say updates enough? I think he did. Because security updates, including the monthly round of vulnerability patches, are among those put on pause, the option addressed complaints from some business customers who have argued that there should be a way to postpone patches from landing on their PCs. IT administrators using a patch management system, such as Microsoft Windows Server Update Services, System Center Configuration Manager, LAN Manager, blah, 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 can already delay updates. Some administrators regularly delay patching as a kind of quality control, assuming that any problems will be uncovered by others, then fixed by Microsoft. However, organizations that rely on Microsoft's Windows Update or Windows Update for Business Services have not had a delay option for security updates. The pause feature will serve that purpose. So, would you like to hit the pause on updates? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
The problem from Microsoft's point of view is that people will pause forever and never get the important patches they need, many, you know, security patches, vulnerability patches. And then, you know, developers don't know what version they're running and have to go to, you know, hoops in their code to make a program work with multiple OSs. So
right.
I can see that, and that's probably where the install at 3 a.m. came from years ago. You're probably not using your computer at 3 a.m.
Probably not on for so many people, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what time zone?
Your local
issue.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, your local time.
Yeah, true. So, like, a stock trader might be working on the the Nikkei exchange in Japan. So,
yeah.
You're up 12 hours ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing worse than the time zone issues. Some of the we had a question on the chat, the live chat about MyMinders, which I am part of, and they had the same issue. You know, it's one thing to have, let's just take the United States, to have six different time zones, counting Alaska and Hawaii, and it's another to not only have those, but some of them do
daylight savings time,
and some do not. Arizona does not, for example.
Right.
So it just becomes a huge.
Why? You know, that still gets me. What year was it that we didn't turn our clocks back to save energy?
World War II. Sometimes during
No. We did.
During the 70s, you mean? Yeah.
70s, 80s.
When we didn't do it, right.
Yeah, we didn't turn our clocks back at late in
the early 80s. The early 80s.
And we didn't turn it back at, guess what?
During the oil crisis.
Everything still worked.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Everybody just, you know, everything still functioned.
Yeah.
So why the heck we still do something that was set up originally for farmers right. and everything else?
For farmers back in the day when they didn't want to spend the electricity and blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
blah. It's just, it is ridiculous, and it is not something we need
not
to do anymore.
Not necessary anymore, and they should just do away with it.
Right.
Inertia.
That's a lot of it is inertia.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons we don't go to metric.
Yeah.
Metric is so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can tell you how many yards away we are. How many meters away are we? It's a little less because a meter is three. I don't know. Yard and a something. I don't even know anymore. And so we don't want to have
close.
To do the math. In
Although,
our heads.
I like the way that they're sneaking it in on us. You know, soda is sold by the liter and half liter.
Right.
Although, and then they have a 20-ounce and 12-ounce, so
right.
they're mixing it. So that, you know, slowly moving everything. Now, the weird thing, I watch a lot of British car shows, and gas is sold by the liter, and mileage is kilometers per
mile.
No, it's kilometers per 100 liters or something like that.
Per 100 liters? How could it?
Yeah, it's 100 liters.
Liter?
Because a liter is
like liters per kilometer.
Yeah.
Right, and because a liter is only a quarter gallon, your liters per kilometer is such a tiny number that it doesn't mean much.
Yeah.
So a lot of times they'll merge and translate on the car shows into miles per gallon. But then I have to remember that it's a European gallon, which
not
is five quarts.
Right. It's
so
an imperial gallon?
I was watching a show about the new Porsche 918 Spyder. Gets 78 miles per gallon.
But
holy
five
crap.
Five quarts.
Yeah.
Five quarts in a gallon, yeah. And it's got three electric motors that do most of the driving.
Right.
But if you really want to, it's got 1,000 horsepower. And we'll do 0 to 60 in 2 seconds.
Yeah. That takes a little more than 70.
For $1 million.
Yeah.
Well, right. Yeah, but that's just money.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the commentators was talking about, you know, the gas guzzler tax that it would get in the U.S. If you can afford $1 million for a hypercar, who cares that it only gets 5 miles per gallon?
Right.
That's
right.
Not going to concern you.
Yep.
Right. The problem.
In fact, some of them was at the Bugatti Veyron. They go gallons per minute. At full throttle, it has 16 minutes of fuel.
Wow.
That's like a 40-gallon tank, but it's doing 250 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, at least you get you to the grocery store for buying milk quick.
Yeah. Well, and that's why airplanes.
Getting home's another issue. You burned it all up.
Yeah. Right. Airplanes work on gallons per minute. And they know the flight time and the weight of the fuel. And that's the weird thing about it is the more fuel you burn, the more efficient you get because you're lighter. Right. So it doesn't take as much fuel to travel.
Right.
So that's
right.
A very tricky calculation.
Mm-hmm. Right. The problem, of course, with electric car, I've always wanted an electric car. I just want an electric car. The problem with electric cars, of course, is that they take forever to recharge and they have limited mileage. Limited amount of time that mm-hmm. they'll run, and now that's getting better. You can get cars with 200 and 300 miles of range, but still take 4 or 5 hours to recharge. There was a company called A Better Place, which sadly I believe is now out of business, where the guy proposed that you buy the car, but you rent the battery. And you could pull into any one of their service stations and just swap batteries.
And then in the 10 or 15 minutes it might take you to fill your gas tank?
Right. They did it. They did a study and discovered it's like, well, I forget, 6 minutes and change for the average.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a little less, 5 minutes and things, whatever it is. And they built a robot that would, you know, you roll over this thing and a pit opens up and the robot pulls the battery out and puts a new battery in. And they said if we could get it under 4 minutes, it would be great. They got it under 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Because there's nothing that says you can't go super fast if you get it right.
Yeah. You know? I've always liked the idea of the gas electric hybrids. I've been looking at the Chevy Volt,
yep.
which doesn't look like an electric car.
Well, right.
It looks good. It's got the electric motor that drives the car if it needs to, but then it's got the gas motor to recharge the batteries and run the car if you need longer electric range. Because it is only 50 miles of electric range, but I only work 10 miles away.
See, right. It depends on what you do and how you do it. Back in the day when we were driving to Illinois regularly to visit my daughter in college, an electric car was useless.
Right.
But now, particularly that I'm retired, where do I go? I go to RIT to teach,
mm-hmm.
come home. There's 30 miles, and there are lots of them that do less than that, more than that, rather.
Yeah.
So that's a doable thing. But I still would, I would still like to be able to say I just got out of work. I want to run some errands or go to a movie or mm-hmm. do whatever I want to do and not have to worry about it.
See, a lot of people are visioning that as the future of self-driving or autonomous cars is the individual person may not own a car anymore. Or you might own that one car you drive on the weekends,
right.
But your second car you don't need to buy because you take the electric car. Right now, if we were in a bigger city, take an Uber to work,
right?
Mm-hmm. Or have that electric car that you don't need to actually own and sit in your driveway doing nothing most of the time.
Right.
And so driving will be a weekend pleasure activity, you know, like horse riding is now, was the analogy they made. Everyone used to own several horses to transport themselves around. And now, you know, they don't. You have horses on the weekend for, you know, for pleasure, and they can see that coming on the car. And we are seeing that with the new Tesla Model 3 starting at $35,000. Almost, it's, you know, affordable for the regular price of a car. And it's got 215 miles per charge. And because it's electric, you get instant torque, 0 to 60 in under 6 seconds, mm-hmm. which is, you know, supercar performance. With Tesla putting in more and more chargers all over the place, that helps. A lot of the city, Rochester City, garages have charging stations where you can park and charge up. Even saw that at our Parenton Town Hall has some electric charging stations. Although I did read that some of the Tesla superchargers that can charge your car really fast, you know, they're meant for people, you go in, have dinner, you know, you come out, your car's charged. They'll park all day long at the supercharger to keep themselves topped up because it was free. Now Tesla's going to start charging for prolonged access to the supercharger because people are complaining they get to a supercharger and they're all being taken up by people parking there all day.
Right.
And now I can't top off my car.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Just real quick, this morning's newspaper had an article in the auto section on the new Chevy Bolt. That's like with a B.
Oh, yeah.
238-mile range. After rebates, it's right around 30,000. Looks a lot like a Prius. Hatchback four-door design type of thing, and yeah. I guess it's been named a car of the year for somebody because of the 238-mile range that goes with it.
Right, nice. Right.
So they are getting to the point where they make a lot of sense if your primary driving is, as Nick was saying, you know, short hops around town, nothing, you know, big out over the road, and if you got a charger at home. You know, you do your running around, plug it in when you get home, and you're ready to go the next day.
Yep.
It looks interesting. It doesn't quite look as nice as my Nissan Cube. But, of course, they don't make the Nissan Cube anymore. So
my wife hates the look of your Cube.
I don't care. Your wife doesn't own it. Yes. I own it, and I love it.
I was going to say, the Nissan Cube has a nice look?
It really does.
It's got a huge window.
It has a utilitarian look.
More importantly, it is a TARDIS. It is bigger on the inside. I promise you this. You get in it, and there's just acres of room inside that thing.
Going back to the 80s, we had Toyota Tercel wagons. You looked at the outside, and you went, really? And you got inside, and all of a sudden, your eyes got real big.
Well, that's just it. You look at the outside of a Cube, and you go, really? And you get inside, and you go, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it.
It can be done. Yep. You know, they do it well, or did it well. And what I always laughed was Toyota decided to stop making the Tercel wagon, and very shortly after that, Subaru came out with the Forester wagon, and they're still making it, and it was basically the same shape.
Yep.
Had that little bit higher roof, and it made all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Which I think is what's going on with the Cube. It has a fairly tall roof.
It has a fairly tall roof, and it's got huge windows, and that shortened back makes it the wheelbase is almost exactly a Mini Cooper size wheelbase. So it turns nicely, it handles ridiculously well, and that's what I've always loved about it. And we'll see. You know, I'm gonna have to get a new car someday, I suppose, and.
The big problem with electric cars is where's the electricity come from? We need more green, you know, solar renewable energy than nuclear plant here, or if you live close enough to Niagara Falls, you're getting, you know, renewable energy there. But we need, you know, we'll centralize the pollution.
I'll say goodbye. You got the music going, so you got to go to a break.
Yes, we do. Thanks. Got to go. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Well, I'm delighted to say that Adobe Systems released security updates for its Flash player, Adobe Reader, and Acrobat, fixing critical vulnerabilities that could allow attackers to install malware on computers. The Flash player update fixes 13 vulnerabilities, 12 that can lead to remote code execution, and one that allows attackers to bypass a security restriction and disclose information. Adobe is not aware of any exploit for these flaws existing in the wild, which does not mean they don't exist. It just means Adobe's not aware of them. Users are advised to upgrade to Flash Player version 24.0.0.194 on Windows, Mac, and Linux. The Flash Player plugin bundled with Chrome, Microsoft Edge, and Internet Explorer will be automatically upgraded through those browsers' representative update mechanisms. However, the update seems to cause Chrome to request enabling Flash Player, which makes many Chrome users very unhappy. The Adobe Reader and Acrobat updates address 29 vulnerabilities, 28 of which can lead to arbitrary code execution. Like with the Flash Player flaws, Adobe is not aware of any of these vulnerabilities being exploited by attackers. Users of the older but still supported Acrobat 11 and Reader 11, those are Roman numerals, should upgrade to version 11.0.19, and those are Arabic numerals. Because of their security sandbox, which makes exploits significantly harder to implement, Adobe Reader and Acrobat are rarely targeted by hackers today compared to some years ago. However, Flash Player remains a hacker favorite, with zero-day attacks against it being relatively common, and with exploits being integrated into widely used web-based attack tools. So, are you still using Flash? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And we need to point out that there are many fake Flash update notices you're going to get. So please go to Adobe.com yourself and download the Flash Player directly from Adobe. Do not agree on any website or any message that pops up because you can't be sure it's real or fake. Always go to Adobe.com to download the Flash Player update.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and absolutely, if you don't need Flash Player, I'm serious about this, uninstall it.
And you may find that even though you thought you needed it, you really don't.
Right.
Most websites will switch to HTML5 or other video players when you need them. And in fact, the latest versions of most of the browsers don't have Flash installed and will actively block Flash from being reported that you have it, to force the website to work on something else.
Right.
But that does bring up another issue. We've had some of our customers call in with this, that if you're running a new browser that blocks Flash and you try to go to a Flash site and all they have is Flash, you'll get a message saying you need to install Flash. So you do. You go back to that website. It still says you need to install Flash because your browser is blocking it. You need to tell your browser in the settings, usually under security or under plugins, to allow Flash for that website. Or you may just want to not go back to that website.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
We did get a couple of questions on the YouTube chat, which I'm actually on today. Not usually, but I am today. Richard Narondequoit wants to know how you create an email address for someone who has never had one. Well, you just go anywhere. You can go to Google. Let's say you want to create a Gmail address. You go to Gmail and say create an email address. It's easy enough to do. You pick one, you give it a password, and bang, you're in.
It is getting harder because you have to pick an address that no one else in the world is using.
Well, right, right. Maybe these days, a lot of people, it's first name dot last name. And even then, if you've got a semi-common name, yep. It's likely somebody will be there. Right, right.
Now, many of the systems will ask if you already have an email address as like a recovery address. So if you forget your password, they can email you at that other address, but you don't have to put it in because some people don't have another email address. In fact, we're seeing some of the internet providers. Generally, when you sign up for internet service at home, you get an email address from that internet provider. You may not know that, but you probably do.
Right.
But we're seeing that some of the providers now are not including email by default because it is so easy to get a free Google address or a free Apple address or, dare I say it, a free Yahoo address.
Right.
Don't use Yahoo. They haven't been very well protective of your account information lately.
That is true. But getting an account from any of those people is just as easy as what we said. Just go there and say, I want a new account, and they'll give you one, and you're done. So that's much easier than it looks. The issue, of course, is because when you have an email address from a particular internet provider, if you then change providers, you lose your email address. So getting an address that's not provided by your internet provider, and again, your internet provider would be Frontier or Time Warner, not Yahoo, not Greenlight. They don't actually give out email addresses. But having one from Google or some other place means that you don't have to change it if you change internet providers. So that's always a good thing. So just go there and sign up and bang, you're done. He also asked if his cell phone shows 3 Wi-Fi router links. How do I delete the 2 inactive ones? Well, it depends on what you mean by inactive. If you mean they're not yours, they're probably your neighbor's just bleeding over into your house. Just ignore them. There is nothing you can do about that. If they are, in fact, 2 other routers that are in your house, you have to turn off the Wi-Fi on them. But none of that is done through the phone, one way or the other. But it is more than likely. For example, in my house, I look at my Wi-Fi, and I have, I think, 8 of them now at 2.5 gigahertz and just 1 at 5 gigahertz, mine. And I can't do anything about the others. They're just all people in my neighborhood who have Wi-Fi routers that are screaming.
And some Wi-Fi routers will run both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. And many of them will, by default, create separate network names for each frequency. They don't need to. It's easier for you if they don't, unless you really want to pick and choose. Generally speaking, the 2.4 gigahertz can penetrate walls better. But it's also a much more crowded spectrum. Your microwave oven is 2.4 gigahertz. Portable phones might be 2.4 gigahertz. So the 5 gigahertz band is less crowded, and you might get better reception on it with your computers and your phones. But it doesn't go through walls as well. So there's right. That trade-off between them. So if both of your networks are named the same, your device will just pick whatever one is the best for it.
Right. And by the way, you can have multiple networks on the same router. Which is what mm-hmm. Richard's story is.
Right.
Here.
So he might have his 2.4 as one name, his 5 as one name, and he could have a guest.
Exactly.
And the guest could be both 2.4 and 5. So you could have 4 different names coming
right.
off your router.
So here's the deal, Richard. You can turn those off in your router. I can't tell you exactly where because I'm not on your router. But generally, you get there through your web browser because they all have a modem, a web address, usually 120. Well. It depends on what your internal address range is. Usually it's 192.168.1.something, and so your phone probably is
Yeah, usually if you're, depending on what version of Windows you're at, you can usually go to, still, even with Windows 10, go down to where it says type in a command, type in CMD, which is a command line. It opens up a little window. And if you type in ipconfig, all one word, ipconfig, and just hit enter, it will show you all these addresses. And one of them is your default gateway. And that's usually right. your address that you can put in, and then it's going to ask you for your administrative password, username and password to get in. And
which is what you set up on the router yourself.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. If you have not set up anything on your router, then you really, really need to do that. because having just the default username and password is a very bad idea. So you should always do that.
That's how a lot of the internet exploits happen, with default usernames and passwords. And we're hearing about more and more devices where the manufacturer hard-coded an administrative password in it,
mm-hmm.
That is now public. And so the bad guys are using that. Was it the Meraki botnet? Millions and millions of light bulbs and webcams and DVRs with default passwords or hard-coded passwords are now part of a giant botnet running the internet and taking down websites.
Right. If something is on the internet, you should be changing its password.
Yep.
If you cannot change its password, then get a different device.
Yep.
It really is that simple. I hate to say it, but it really is that simple. The days when we can just randomly allow junk on the internet because why not is long past. So you need to be aware of what your what things you have right. that are on the internet,
especially now with the Internet of Things, the IoT.
Right.
The S in IoT stands for security.
Right. Exactly. This is exactly right. But so many things are on the internet. Your Google Home is on the internet. Your Alexa is on the internet. Your people have their doorbells on the internet. They have cameras in their homes. They have baby monitors. They have everything. If you have any one of those devices on the internet, crack open that manual and figure out how to change the password. The administrative default password.
Somebody posted a picture on one of the blogs about a refrigerator. A lot of high-end refrigerators yep. now have a giant screen on them. We'll show you
weather
and
those
things like
that.
My
wife didn't get one.
Yeah,
or
LG.
It can tell you what's in your refrigerator.
We have an LG. It's not that one.
It can be a shopping list. But it's generally they're running Windows Embedded back there, and some guy had a picture where he couldn't get his ice cubes because the refrigerator was updating Windows.
Okay, maybe I'm glad we don't have one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the everything it will eventually be on the internet. And so every one of those devices has to be managed. We are long past the days when you can just randomly sit back and go, yo, 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 I'm on the internet. You have to be a system administrator for all of the devices in your home that can be on the internet.
One thing that LG and Samsung did do was on the newer models now, and even on my washer and dryer, they've got it set up so that you can get online with a tech on the phone, and he'll tell you hit a series of buttons. Also, will play a tune or tone. You got to put your phone up to that so they can hear it. It then diagnoses what the issue is with the appliance. So when they come, the repairman comes, he knows what he has to fix.
Nice. That's a lovely thing. But if your device is on the internet and so many, and by the way, a lot of you have printers and copiers that are on the internet. Again, get off of the default usernames and passwords. That's a very, very important thing. All right. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve. I'm not going to, but I want to. And I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We are the heck out of here, and we will see you in just 166 hours with the longest running computer show in the known and unknown universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. I'll be counting the minutes.